You are listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon, we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, earth, community, spirit, all six areas of the Healthful Living model, and you can read more about that at healthfulliving.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified medical and clinical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate with Healthful Living, and I'm here today with
Julie Matthews, and I am a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living.
And just there at the beginning of the show, we were listening to The Way You Look Tonight, a very special song for Julie and I. Goes right back to September 9th of 2000 in our wedding. That was our dance song, and it was a lot of fun and just a really, really beautiful time. And tremendous loving memories whenever we hear it. So we thought it would be apropos to play that at the beginning of today's show, since today we're going to be speaking all about, love in a broader sense, but marriages, making them work. And, marriage is a pretty big concept, isn't it, dear?
Absolutely.
It's a pretty big deal. And certainly something that so many people are kind of after, you know, and this feeling of marriage. And it's just so interesting because we just walked into the studio today and we just learned
that our past host here that was just on Prison Focus, Charles, just got engaged.
Yeah, so there's love in the air. So appropriate that we should be speaking about this today. And there happens to be also going on right now here in San Francisco, 12th Annual Conference for Smart Marriages and Happy Families, July 2nd to the 5th, right here in San Francisco. Speakers from this is put on by the Coalition for Marriages, Family, and Couples Education. Therapists, psychologists, couples, from all across the country coming here right now in San Francisco.
Wow.
To talk about, discuss, share information, insights about love and relationships and making them work. And, with divorce rates in the U.S., what they are, it's crazy. There's definitely something fundamentally going awry.
Well, one question, is it just the U.S.? Maybe it's all over. It's not about the U.S.
That's a great question. Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Well, we have with us today two specialists, two folks that are happily married. They're work together. They're a team. They've written a phenomenal book called Mining for Gold. Melva and Jesse Johnson are on the line. They're going to join us in just a moment. They're here in town for the conference, and I understand that they're tremendously connected with Harville Hendrick's work.
That's right. The book that I was reading just before I met you, which I think is really interesting. In fact, I was specifically doing some of the exercises, and I actually tried to find some of the exercises after we got together because I think I read that book within days of meeting you.
I remember seeing it when I came over to your house the first day, and I said, that's interesting. And for listeners who may have heard Harville Hendrick's name, he's brought forth this amazing work called Imago Therapy, and we're going to be learning more about that. So let's just get our friends on the line and see if they're here with us. Are you here with us, Jesse and
Melba?
Yes, we are. Yes. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Now, you're very welcome. Yes. We're glad to be here.
Our pleasure.
Now, you're actually in town right now, yes?
Yes, we are.
In wonderful San Francisco. Enjoying the sunshine and the fog.
Yes, yes. Wonderful. So you're having a good time?
Wonderful. Yeah.
Time. Good, good.
Fantastic.
All right. Well, you two have been married for over 30 years now, so you have a pretty good... You're pretty good experts in your own right, it appears.
Absolutely. 31 years as this past May.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. So what...
Well, and also we understand that you both have been married before you've been married to each other, so that says something quite significant. But I want you to just start in, please tell me a little bit, number one, about this conference and how you guys are here, because you've written this book, and what's going on right now here in San Francisco that brings you into town?
Well, we enjoy coming to the Smart Marriages Conference because we have a chance to connect with colleagues and so many people who are doing a lot of hard work to support marriages to be effective and to work.
Mm.
And it's just a wonderful time to be here. Yesterday and Tuesday, we assisted Harville Hendrick's in his Couplehood as a Spiritual Path program. Which is another component of the Imago relationship work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fascinating.
And the other thing you should know is that the conference, which brings together over 3,000 people annually,
wow.
is composed of various kinds of therapists, marriage and family counselors. There are also clergy. There are chaplains here from the military. And there are also a group of people that are like marriage educators. They teach classes in marriage and things of that nature. So it's a wonderful mix of a lot of different people who are committed to supporting people in marriages.
Sure, sure. Well, our show stems from our practice here in San Francisco called Healthful Living, and we're mm-hmm. just really all about helping people to be focused on health, on the health of things,
yes.
and oriented themselves in a very positive direction, because so many times in life, in so many areas of life, we get caught on noticing everything that's wrong and nitpicking and focusing on that, and then we end up attracting more of that and creating more of that. Mm-hmm. And it seems that those patterns play out certainly so much in relationships. So it's I'm very inspired to hear, number one, about the conference and to learn more about your work in that, you're directly helping and support couples in, focusing on what they're co-creating constantly. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's been a joy for me to be able to do this work and really help people to see the potential and the possibilities in their relationship. Because even though people come to us because they have conflict or issues they have difficulty resolving on their own, when they get there, they have an opportunity to see that there's a bigger picture trying to evolve underneath the surface of the conflict in the places where they get stuck.
Mm. And I'd like to add to that, too, that there's a universal principle that says what you focus on expands. And many times in relationships, there are a lot of wonderful things that are happening in a relationship, but people tend to focus only on the parts that are not working, and they don't give enough attention to celebrate the parts of the relationship that does work. Hmm. And we're saying that if you focus more on the things that are working, you find the energy and the motivation to address any of those areas that need attention.
Hmm. We were talking before the show started, and Martin was talking about rates of divorce in the U.S., but are the rates of divorce in the U.S. different than other places in the world?
Unfortunately, the United States, according to statistics, has the highest divorce rate in the world.
Hmm. Wow. And any thoughts on that before we do? Diving into the...
Why is that? Why do Americans have such difficulty remaining together and making this work?
Well, my theory... I don't have a lot of research to back it up, but my theory is that our culture is a instant gratification, throwaway culture.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like if it's going to work, it has to work instantly, it has to work all the time, and if it doesn't work, get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
And it's the mindset that we try to help people to shift into, in the way that we do it is that we help people to know that when they first come together, they do experience that instant gratification. But what they don't know is that that is going to fade over time, and that is supposed to fade, because that instant gratification that they receive when they come together and they can show up for each other in wonderful ways, nature has this drug that it releases in the brain that gives each of us assistance to show up better and more effectively than we normally can. We stretch right out of our comfort zone.
Huh, interesting.
And when that drug fades away, we're back to what is normal and comfortable for us. And what's normal and comfortable for us sometimes will trigger our partners, and then we get into this stage two power struggle situation. And what people don't know is that stage is supposed to begin, and it's supposed to end not in divorce, but end in each person having a blueprint to follow so that they can get to stage three and experience the relationship of their dreams.
Hmm. So do you have a lot of different sort of, theories or premises behind the Imago principles around, being born whole and complete and then certain things happen? Can you describe that a little?
Yes. So the theory is that we come into the world, as a matter of fact, it's the theory based on the potential and possibilities within all of us, that we're all born with that. And along our life journey, growing up, there are obstacles along the way where we don't receive the specific kind of nurturing that we need to grow and develop into whole human beings. And those deficits or the places where we don't get nurturing, it is not intentional by the people who raise it. It's based on the abilities and the skills that they have based on what they received growing up.
Mm.
So when people go into a relationship, they're attracted to a person who has the missing parts of them. And that's part of the unconscious attraction. And so they are not aware of it when they're in the romantic stage, but it is in that second stage during conflict and frustration that those missing pieces are revealed.
Now, were those the same missing pieces that were missing from the parents?
Yes.
Ah.
Yes. And so we're attracted to a person who has the same missing pieces.
Now, if we have a more traumatic childhood, do we have a more difficult time in a marriage because there's more to work on, or is there not necessarily a relationship with that?
Well, sometimes, because sometimes when we've had a traumatic experience, I have found that people who have come in to see either me or Jesse, that if they have done a lot of personal work, they're attracted to someone who is going to wound them in a way where they're very vulnerable, but they have enough resources within that they can work it through and invite the person to work it through with them.
Is there, what happens with, I mean, you were talking about people doing personal work, and is there also a difference with successive marriages of people that actually do work before they meet their significant other? Is it a different dynamic going in, or is it still the same thing played out no matter where you are?
Well, the vulnerabilities, people still get triggered. However, when they have done work before they get married, it's not as traumatic, and they have more of a motivation to pay attention to awareness of how they're contributing to the nightmare that they're experiencing in the moment.
Mm.
And if a person has not had the support of self-awareness and understanding based on the work that you all do, that it's harder for them to even hear that they are a contributor to what's going on, and that underneath that is not about shame or blame. It's about what's trying to grow and heal within them.
So,
I'd like to just add that for we can take ourselves as an example of that. Melvin and I, when we first came together as friends before we became lovers, we did a lot of very important personal work. In fact, we did a lot of that together. We took a number of personal growth classes and so on. So we were very much aware of a lot of the things about each of us. I was aware of myself. She was aware of herself in terms of areas where we needed to grow and heal. So when we came together as a couple, the commitment we made to each other was that we were going to support each other in our healing and growth journey. So if you're, you know, in response to your question, does it make a difference if you've done some personal work? Yes, it absolutely does. In addition to that, if both persons in a relationship are committed to making to healing and growing and being whole, then that just simply provides tremendous motivation for you to work together to achieve that.
Seeking a sustainable solution,
yes.
A sustainable pattern.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, people do get so oriented in our society to, you know, let's get something that resolves, it feels great right now, you know, and we do kind of get addicted to that notion. And then, unfortunately, we have all these models in the media and celebrities where, you know, marriage is a throwaway kind of a thing.
Right.
And it's, and I was reading through some of your material this morning, actually, and read something that Julie said to me, Martin, you always say that, which is that people seem to get so fixated on getting married and forget about what it means about being married.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. You know, it's so interesting that when I see and hear how much weddings cost and the time and energy that usually the bride puts into having a phenomenal, unforgettable experience, which is wonderful, and I see the other part where there's little or no preparation for the marriage itself. I can just see the couple going into stage two maybe during the honeymoon.
Ah.
Because, as a matter of fact, someone said recently that when couples come together, generally after the wedding vows, there is a major conflict within 72 hours of exchanging vows.
Really? Tell me more. What's with that?
Well, our belief is that once people come together and the bond is established between a couple, mm-hmm. it is at that time that the primitive part of the brain says, I don't have to be on guard anymore. I don't have to show my presentational self anymore. Now I can move forward to get what I really, really want. And so the conflict is fueled in that because whatever, and it doesn't have to be anything serious that the couple will get upset about, but if when they peel away the layers, they will find out that the basic underlying deeper needs where they, as the reason for them coming together, is not being met in that particular situation. And so there's a big blowout. And if they don't have awareness, they don't know how to mine for the potential under that. That's what we call the gold. If they don't have a way to mine for the gold that's underneath that, the precious experiences that both of them are longing for, identify them, and then respond to them, they'll stay stuck. They'll get over the conflict, go back to talking to each other, getting along, but then it'll happen again and again and again.
Wow. You were just talking about experiences, and Mark and I have a theory on we go to an event every year called Burning Man, which is this very intense, extreme camping experience in the middle of the desert with tens of thousands of people, and there's sandstorms, and you have to bring water for everything, including taking a shower, and it is just 2 weeks before and 72 hours leading up to it, you know, you don't get any sleep, and it's really hot and intense, and all of the problems of your relationship come to the surface in all of the intensity of that, and so we kind of sort of half joke and half serious about someday leading couples through what I would call sort of an extreme experience because, you know, for truth, it either breaks you up, which we've seen happen to many of our friends in the middle of the event, or it turns out to be something that the two of you get to look back on and get to be excited about creating something or surviving it or learning something. And it actually ends up this difficult experience ends up being a great opportunity for growth and closeness. And I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Oh, yeah. And see, what you described is that's where the potential and the possibilities surface for a transformation for the couple. Because, you know, there's some couples that are conflict avoidant because they think that it's a sin, you know, they think it's negative. And actually, when you have those intense experiences, if there is a safe place emotionally, spiritually, and environmentally to explore what's happening underneath, oh my goodness, it's a phenomenal opportunity for the couple to be aware and learn and grow together. Because they will find out, oh, this is really what's going on with us. You are not my enemy. You are really my ally on my journey. We are on this journey together. And look at the possibilities before us.
Right.
Oh, I didn't see it before. Oh, that's what this means.
What do you find some of the most common relationship problems people have?
Well, in our book, Mining for Gold in Your Relationships, in Chapter 3, we talk about the 10 most prominent relationship problems. And they involve, of course, money. They include a lack of being able to communicate. I would say that most couples say that inability to communicate is their number one problem in their relationships. And then there would be money and then sometimes children and time. Those would be some. And the inability to be able to work out differences, you know, we call it irreconcilable differences and conflicts. those would be some of the most prominent ones. And the unfortunate thing is, what most couples don't know, is that there is a way. All of those problems can really be solved if you have the skills and the tools and the information you need in order to make it different. But most people don't know that. That's why the divorce rate is so high, because a lot of times people just don't know. Even then, they attempt very hard to try to make things better for the relationship, but they just don't have the particular skills and knowledge needed to do that. And that's why we work so very hard and so committed to the work that we're doing, to try to help bring information and help and support to couples.
Well, my goodness, nobody teaches you that. Nobody trains you for what to do when your relationship gets challenged, or when your own personal stuff gets pushed around in your relationship with your partner. You're kind of alone at that point, and there's no training. Your parents don't usually talk about that, and who knows what kind of parental situation anybody had.
That's true.
So, I've actually had the opportunity to, I've had this happen with some people in my life, and I get to hear from them how truly stuck they are without their own personal resources or ideas at all what to do in the situation. And it has to be tremendously painful. Now,
And then it's so painful that they just want to get out of the pain.
Yes.
So it's so much easier just to get divorced than it is to go through the pain.
Right.
And you know what? And that pain is, like the problems that Jesse shared with you as prominent problems that we experience, that couples have, that all of those problems have a common theme below the surface of that. And it's the pain that the two of you just mentioned, and that pain is connected to a core theme, that couples have an experience of a rupture in feeling connected to each other, and they don't know how to find the way back to each other. That is very, very painful. And unless they have a process, first an awareness of what's really, really going on, that there really has been a rupture, and an unintentional rupture, but a rupture all the same. So the awareness first, and then having a step-by-step process to heal the rupture and then turn toward each other to get back on the same page. That's the bigger work.
Right.
And those steps we also outline in our book, too, by the way.
Wow.
So how do people come to you? I mean, how does, because anybody could be listening, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we want to help people realize that, number one, we're talking about, I mean, everybody is in a relationship, but everyone's got relationship stuff.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's simply just a matter of saying, okay, how do I get some help figuring out my stuff? Because some other people are dealing with this and they've got experience, as you two do. How do people generally come to the book, and how, or is it the book, or you also do personal coaching work? Tell me a little bit more about how your approach, and let's assume we're dealing with someone who's just like hearing this and going, I think, I could learn some things here.
Yes. Through the book. And we do relationship counseling and coaching and weekend workshops, and we're developing a relationship mastery program where anyone across the world can participate in, where people will be able to sign up, and we have telephone coaching. It's going to be a 6-week to 10-week course. So in addition to one-on-one, we have figured out a way to support people across the globe and helping them to become aware of what's going on in the relationship, normalizing that for them, and then helping them to create a vision for the kind of relationship that they really want and support them to get there.
I would also like to add that we also have an online presence, where we have a number of articles that we have written, and there's also reports on, relationships and how to improve them, and there's information on there for persons who are both married as well as who are single. And we're constantly adding things to it all the time. For example, very soon we're going to be coming out with an audio series about relationships where people can tune in and can hear us discuss various topics that relate to relationships. And that particular website is www.personaltransformations.com. And so we invite your listeners to go to our site and to see what's available there. And our intent is to reach out to as many people as possible across the world.
Well, actually, in the personal transformations, and we emphasize with the S at the end, because there's another website, singular. So ours is with the S. And that is our blog. And so we have a blog also as a way to communicate with people as well.
Terrific. Now, one of the things I heard is that this week at the Smart Marriages event here in San Francisco, you guys are launching a new assessment, relationship assessment, like a pre-marriage type of a thing?
Yes, Jesse, why don't you?
Yes, it's called Excellent Marriage. And actually what it is an assessment which can be taken online where couples can actually respond to several questions in 15 areas of relationships. And when you respond to those questions, you will receive in response in an email a kind of a report on what we see is are the strengths in your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
What are some areas, for example, where maybe there's a little bit of conflict or some areas that may need some help, and then maybe some areas that are some major areas where you need a lot of help. And we'll also in that printout that you will receive will be some suggestions and ideas about how to improve in those areas that need attention.
So if somebody is, you know, trying to, I guess, figure out where to start, what's a first step people can do in the face of a difficult relationship? What you mentioned some steps in your book, and where should people start?
Well, I believe the awareness part would be good, and I would say that we intentionally put those seven stories in the book so that people could possibly see themselves in some of the situations, because the process that we use for all seven stories are the same steps. But what we figured that if people could see their own situation in there, they could start with the awareness of what it is that's trying to heal and grow within them and begin communicating that with each other. And then have an opportunity, if they want to go further, get some coaching, either get articles or sign up for one of the relationship mastery programs, or we can help them to find an Imago relationship therapist in their area, because there's 2,000 of us all around the world. So we would be able to support people to get the help that they needed.
Great. Well, for people just tuning in, you are listening to Julian Martin Matthews on Reality Sandwich on KPOO San Francisco, and we are speaking with Jesse and Melva Johnson and their book, Mining for Gold in Your Relationship. And I just had a question for you. You had mentioned communication being one of the challenges that people face in a relationship, and I guess it sounds basic, but I don't know if I really get that. I don't know if that's because Martin and I do communicate well, but what is the challenge people face with communication, and how can people have better communication?
Yeah, I think I'll start, Jesse, and I know Jesse's going to fill in. The problem that most people have with communication is that many people talk in a monologue, and so when, for instance, if someone is saying something, like maybe I'm talking to Jesse, and he half hears what I'm saying because in his mind he's preparing for a response. Mm. So, and then if I didn't feel like I'm being heard, then I'm going to be reactive to him, and then he's going to react to that. So then communication breaks down.
Okay, I can relate.
So we teach people how to have a dialogue. And dialogue meaning having each partner has an opportunity to be heard and understood, meaning that the person who is sending the message has an opportunity to share their complete message, the facts of the message. The other person reflects back what they're hearing, and they summarize the whole message. And then the second step or the third step is the person who is listening will tell the person who sent the message what makes sense to them about what the person is saying. Doesn't mean that they agree with it. It just means that I followed your logic, and even though I don't agree with it, maybe I do, you make sense. You're not crazy. I can understand where you're coming from.
Mm.
And then the fourth step is imagining what the other person is feeling, the person who sent the message. So if I can imagine what my partner is feeling, my partner feels compassion for me. Now, a person who feels listened to, heard, and understood will relax their defenses, and they are in a place where they feel safe. And then you know, you switch so that both people have an opportunity to be heard and understood. Then the relationship, the couple, is ripe to take the next step toward resolving whatever is going on. One of the basic things that has just happened is that they have attended to the rupture that they had in feeling connected. So they're feeling connected, and they can then take the next step.
Mm, okay, that definitely makes sense. And as I'm hearing you talk, I start thinking of, you know, experiences that Martin and I had where we've done that and not done that, and I'm playing some of those in my mind, and I'm noticing there is almost a. There's almost like an observer piece of this whole thing where we become our own, I guess, coaches, where someone will say, oh, wow, I just realized I was being my mother, or someone will say, you know, I don't think you're hearing me, I just want you to be able to hear me. So I'm guessing it takes some certain level of awareness, seeing those patterns and also not reacting all the time so that you're able to engage some of those tools. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. It's really, communication is really a skill. And I think probably one of the reasons why the two of you communicate better than, I would say, the average person is because of the fact that you're communicators. And part of, like this, okay, like you have this radio show,
right.
So you communicate with people. So your ability to communicate is probably much higher than the average person. And that communication is a skill, and you know that as well because, again, you're communicating in this radio show, and so that requires a certain level of comfort and knowledge and ability to comprehend and communicate with other people. So that's great. But it is a skill, and it's something that has to be practiced. The problem also with a lot of times in communications is just when things are going well with you, you know, you probably do a pretty good job. Of most people do,
right.
Of communicating. It's when the buttons get pushed.
Right.
That's when there's difficulty because, as Melva mentioned, if I'm upset about something, or let's say she's upset about something, and that she has pushed, her buttons have been pushed, my button is pushed, when she's talking to me, I'm not paying attention to what she's saying.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm doing is probably preparing a response. That's the way that we used to do that.
Right.
We now have learned through the process that we teach to be able to really listen to each other and to hear what the other, and as you mentioned, the steps that we go through, the validation and the empathy part, so that I really hear what she has to say.
Mm-hmm.
And we really pay attention to what's happening in our brain because when we get triggered and become reactive, it's almost like we have given a five-year-old the keys to our car and allow them to drive because the five-year-old in us will come out and we interact from that level. So if we have a chance to calm ourselves down and prepare ourselves to have a conversation of connection, that's what dialogue is about, a conversation of connection, we put ourselves in the position to have a more effective and loving outcome.
Mm. Do people come to you before they get married? Is that ideally when people would do this work, or?
Well, actually, I'm sorry.
Actually, both. We have couples who have been to married, who've been married for years, who have unresolved issues in their relationship, who come and will come to us for help and support. We also have, and the good news is, we do have a number of couples now who are engaged. Who will come to us. In fact, we call that marriage insurance. You know, it's like, come learn some skills, learn how to communicate, learn how to solve problems, how to work together, and so on, before you get married, so that when, as you enter the marriage, you can go into it with a great deal more confidence, knowing that, yes, we now have the skills that we need in order to make it work.
And expect the bump.
Right.
And here's how to navigate the bump.
Right. I'm reminded of a couple that came to one of our workshops not long ago. It was an older couple who'd been married, I think, probably pretty close to 50 years, and they had a daughter who was getting married. And so they came to the workshop, learned how to work together, and so they were so thrilled by what they learned that they went home and told their daughter, we're not going to spend another dime on this wedding until you and our son-in-law-to-be goes and takes this workshop. Because we're not about to spend $30,000 or $40,000 on a wedding and have you back home in a few months.
And apparently you have a successful rate at preventing divorces, right? Is that?
Yes. You know, it is so exciting. We've had people, we have worked with people who have filed for divorce.
Wow.
And going through, you know, mining for gold process and peeling away the layers of what's really going on underneath, when couples found out what was really happening, that they were really missing each other and meeting each other's needs, and they gave each other another chance. We've had them call the divorce lawyer and say, let's put this on hold. We're going to try this again.
Right.
Wow.
That is so fulfilling. I tell you, this work is so exciting. I'm just so beside. I am so grateful that I get to do this work and get to do it with Jesse.
And we also one day had a young child. He must have been 5 or 6 years old. I don't know how old he was, but he managed somehow to get our phone number. And he called our office and he said, thank you for keeping my mommy and daddy together.
Aww. That's sweet. It, more than sweet. It's, you know, changes the dynamic of probably an entire life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the most important thing for keeping a marriage together or not keeping it together? When is a marriage irreconcilable or not? And, you know, we have about a little less than 5 minutes left, and I'd love to find out. You know, I'm assuming there are some situations where it's just not meant to work. Is it important? Is it more important the person you pick or the commitment of the person? So share a little bit about what can be saved and what might not be so successful.
Well, I would say, start off by saying that there are some situations that we might even suggest or recommend that persons really seriously consider not staying married or even getting married. Now, those would be situations, for example, where there's abuse, particularly physical abuse or emotional abuse would be an example of that. Another example would be any kind of a situation with a person who would put themselves and their family and their spouse at risk. For example, persons who would be addicted to drugs or alcohol and who might squander whatever financial resources the family has trying to feed their addiction. And when I say that, I'm saying these would be individuals who are not taking any serious steps toward getting the help they need in order to turn their life around.
Mm-hmm.
And so so those would be examples of that. Persons who are involved in various kind of criminal activities, and their partner is really trying to live a decent law-abiding kind of life. Those would be situations, as well as people who have serious mental health problems, who may need to be medicated and who will refuse to go for treatment or take their medication. Those are examples.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Beyond that, I think if two people are really committed to making their marriage work and they're both willing to take responsibility for their role in creating either the marriage of their dreams versus the marriage of their nightmare, then there's always this opportunity, the chance that they turn it around.
Mm.
It's also a state of being, you know, because there's a commitment that I want to be the best loving and caring person that I can be.
Right.
And I want to express that to my partner, and I'm going to invite and open up to them being the best that they can be,
mm-hmm.
I think a marriage has more than a chance to not just survive, but thrive.
Wow.
Absolutely beautiful.
And we would also say that how you are at home, if you're in a loving, really loving, connected relationship at home with a spouse, then you take that love to the world. It gives you more love to pass around, to give to other people, and so your whole world, you know, is much happier and more fulfilled when you're happy at home. And at the same time, it's also true that when things are not good at home, it seems like things are not good in the world for you.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Sounds like mining for gold to me. Hey, I want to thank you two so much, Jesse and Melva Johnson. Your book, Mining for Gold in Your Relationships, sounds like the best website for folks to go to is Personal Transformations, with an S at the end, personaltransformations.com. That's your blog site. And you're in town still. The Smart Marriages Happy Families Conference is still going on here in San Francisco. So perhaps if folks want to drop in, and I guess they'll find you down there probably near a Harville Hendricks booth, perhaps?
Right next to it.
All right.
Well, thank you so much.
You're very
welcome.
Thank
you. It's been
thank
delightful.
Thank
Thanks for joining
you.
Us.
I enjoyed every moment.
All right.
Take
bye.
Care.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. We're going to do about a quick musical break here for 2 seconds, and then we're going to check in, folks, in just about 2 minutes with Michelle Darby. She is
going to give us more information on the LBAM update, and we cannot wait to hear what is going on with that, because we were thinking everything is fine, and it appears it may not be. So stay tuned for this important information.
Let's cut that right there.
You didn't
Welcome
get to hear
back.
That two hearts beat as one. That was the whole point of the song.
You're right, it was. But I thought right there, that last line about just fools and
well, I didn't want to talk about fools. I wanted to talk about two hearts beat as one, but that's okay.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, dear. I was so eager to get back on the line here and speak
with
Michelle, because, you know, you're right. Those lyrics were it was all about love, but there was part of it there was just like, you know, fools, and I'm thinking these fools, these government dumbos that are thinking that we're fools, that are trying to continue to put one over on us.
I know, for this LBAM spray.
With this LBAM spray thing. I mean, we've done several shows in the past about this. This is the most ludicrous thing to come from our government in a long, long time. And then they give us this, oh, we're not going to spray your city,
Well, we got to hear from Michelle. So for people that are just tuning in that haven't heard about this, there was the light brown apple moth spraying of pesticides over large urban areas. And the latest thing that we heard in the Chronicle and various places was that they were stopping the spray, that they were not going to be spraying anymore, and that they were going to be doing some more ground-type programs. So, Michelle, are you on the line with us?
I am.
All right. Tell us what is going on. Is this inaccurate information?
Well, first of all, what I want to say is I want to thank everyone out there who wrote a letter or made a phone call or did any work on getting the information out there about the spray, because all of the work, the collective work of the public, has gotten the state to the place where they are right now, which is they did decide to halt the urban spray, the aerial urban spray. And I think that's a testament to the power of an informed movement of citizens.
Mm.
So that's a very powerful thing that we've done, and we need to acknowledge that to everyone listening who had something to do with it, and to all our government officials and all of the organizations that took a stand. Now, that said, the state still intends to aerially spray forested in other areas like Mount Tam and maybe the East Bay Parks for the LBAM, and they're also still planning to ground spray and use other dangerous pesticides, including permethrin, which is a carcinogen and a neurotoxin, in our neighborhoods. That hasn't changed.
Oh, no.
The state has also filed court documents indicating that they intend to proceed without an environmental review. They filed an appeal to the decisions down in Santa Cruz and Monterey, so they're appealing those decisions. So it seems clear to me that their intent is to spray and to move forward with this LBAM program.
So, go ahead.
I was going to say we've also asked for written clarification of what their treatments that they plan to do, what they are, but they haven't responded. And we're trying to work very hard to reclassify the moth because that will end this right now.
Right.
It's very unsafe and unnecessary and an ineffective program. So what was your question?
Wow. I'm trying to remember what my question was after all that.
Okay.
Well,
so
I can tell you one other thing. We're still waiting for a new map. They haven't determined to us what they mean by rural, what they mean by urban, and what they mean by forested, and they have not released a map of the areas. I know for a fact that San Mateo has extended the quarantine, and San Mateo County has included more portions of the county, so we're not really sure what all that means, and we're asking for them to clarify.
So, you know, I keep thinking this sounds a lot like Funny Business to me because when this all came out, I was, you know, relieved and, of course, felt like my job was done. Mm-hmm. And now I'm realizing all this sneaky stuff, at least 50% of it, still is going on as planned. And some of the, you know, so, you know, I don't know if we know anything now about motives or sneakiness or what's going on or what's not, but it seems like they're still, you know, it doesn't sound like they've backed down at all. In fact, it sounds like they're still on the serious attack over here of trying to do things without an environmental impact report. I mean,
yeah, and now filing suit to overturn the other two cases. I mean, I was thinking, like, you know, they had, you know, eased up on this and realized the extent of what the people were saying and, you know, the not safe, not effective, not necessary seems pretty compelling argument against this whole darn thing. Yet, to find that they just stopped the city spraying and trying to get me off their back?
That's what it seems to me. It seems like that this feels like a PR move to me, a way for them to take the pressure off and still keep the LBAM program. You've got to understand that this is emergency eradication program is what has allowed them to to use $75 million from the federal budget. That $75 million is earmarked for this program. So if the program goes away, the money goes away.
Mm.
So they can only use the money for this program. But
right, and it has to be considered an emergency, which means that the bug can't be reclassified, right?
In their minds.
Right.
The bug should be reclassified.
Right.
That is the most honest thing to do. That is the truthful thing to do in this case. Whether they'll do it, well, that's sort of in the federal government's hands right now, but we're hoping to make some headway in that direction.
So do we, so after this new announcement came out that they stopped the spray, have there been people behind the scenes that have known that that wasn't true and there's been people working on this diligently since that moment?
Yes.
Okay, and you know, without divulging any secrets, what do we know about what are people doing to help us, and what can we do to help take this further?
Well, those are really good questions. So some of the things that we are doing is there is a lot of movement happening out here. One of the things that I think has been a silver lining for this whole cloud of the LBAM program is that a whole new generation of environmental activists have been born, and they're not stopping. So there's something happening on Monday I'd like to tell you guys about at the City Hall. Supervisor Alioto Peer is heading up some resolutions and some possible ballot measures to return control of pesticides back to the local governments rather than state and federal governments. So there's going to be a time for comments during the public comments section in City Hall, room 250, on Monday, July 7th at 10 a.m. So I'd urge everyone to go and make their voices heard. This basically means that we would, as a city, be able to say whether we want to be sprayed or not. So and it provides that cities have more control over what happens to them than states coming in deciding what's going to happen in a community. So that's a very positive thing that's happening. we are also doing everything we can to oppose this program. We have people doing some reaching out to our representatives in Washington and hoping to get this moth reclassified. We're doing everything we can to find out exactly what they're planning to do. We're still waiting for responses from the CDFA about what exactly their ground spray program and their entire program is going to be. So lots of stuff is happening behind the scenes. What people can do is continue to write to the governor, write to your representatives, and urge them to stop the LBAM program once and for all.
Right.
Since it's not necessary, it won't work, and it's most likely going to be very, very unsafe for the public.
Mm. Thanks, Michelle. And the best websites for people to go to?
Excuse me. Any stopthespray.org website. Stopthespraysf.org is our website. There's, if you're in Marin, it's stopthespraymarin.org, eastbay.stopthespray.org, or you can go and access all of them at stopthespray.org. There's a place you can link to your community.
Great.
Great.
Thanks
Thank
for
you
the
so
update,
much.
Michelle.
Thanks a lot,
thanks
you guys.
Thanks for your hard work.
Okay, thanks very
bye.
Much.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, I'm happy that there's some movement, but at the same time, I'm so discouraged sometimes that we have to fight tooth and nail for everything, and there's deception around every corner.
Absolutely.
It's really upsetting.
These people are still trying to jam this thing at us to access $75 million of government money so they can spray people with known toxic chemicals.
Right.
And they're still pushing for it.
Right. I know. Well, you know, I think the whole key piece there was Michelle was talking about the truth. You know,
right.
This is, you know, that would be the truth, or the right thing to do. And obviously, they don't really care about that, do they?
Right, right. Well, interesting show today.
Well, we started out with
started
a lot,
out
very
speaking
lovely
about
show
love
about
and marriage.
Love, yes.
And we want to thank our guests again. PersonalTransformations.com is the best place for Jesse and Melva Johnson's website.
Yes.
Learning all about more, just really about love and how to make it work,
yes.
Making marriages work.
Our favorite topic, near
yes.
and dear to our hearts.
Yes. has been Reality Sandwich. I'm Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate with Healthful Living, and I'm here with Julie today. And we're here every Thursday at noon for Reality Sandwich Radio. We'll be back next Thursday with Eric Biggs speaking about happiness and how to create happiness regardless of any circumstances that have come up in your life. Remember that all change begins with you. This is 89.5 KPOO San Francisco.